think there is a lot of concern about the democratic judicial reform that we want to move ahead with, but people think that it's going to result in a fissure that I don't think will last, because people will see at the end that Israel was a democracy, is a democracy, and will be even a stronger democracy after this democratic reform. So I think you're right. There's a lot of tension right now, and I wish it wasn't so. But I'm quite confident that we'll get over this this difficulty, because you know you have to reform things that get ossified. And in Israel, what we've had is the ossification of the imbalance between the three branches of government that has to be corrected.
The voice of Israel Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu talking to Piers Morgan on Sky on Monday. You must have seen the images on the telly or the interweb. The state of Israel has seen people protesting in vast numbers, and what's described as one of the biggest internal crises in the country's history, under pressure from his own president, Isaac Herzog, as well as US President Biden. Israel Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu announced on Monday he would delay the government's proposal to limit the Supreme Court's powers, including their authority to review the legality of Israel's basic laws, which function as the country's constitution, but only until after Passover, which is approaching next month. Now, critically, the protests included members of the military and the army reserves, prompting fears Israel's national security was at risk. I'm joined by Richard Silverstein, Jewish freelance writer on Israel and author of the blog Tikkun Olam. Richard has also written regularly for Middle East Eye and Al Jazeera, and he joins us from Seattle. Richard, welcome to our little wireless program. Can you quickly recap for our audience why Israelis have been protesting in such extraordinary numbers?
Well, first, I'm glad to be with you this evening. The reason that this is happening is that Israel has had a right-wing government basically for the past 50 years, with a couple of intermissions for other governments that were not right-wing. But this government is in a total category unto itself. It really is introducing what many people are calling a fascist legislative agenda that would dismantle the Supreme Court, as you mentioned, that would eliminate the right of the Attorney General to review laws and determine whether they were constitutional or not. It would also remove from an independent committee the right to name justices to the court and give that right to the government itself. And because of the domination by the right wing of Israeli governments, this really ensures far-right domination into decades to come. So Israelis are, you know, they like to feel that they live in a democracy, and they see democracy being stolen away from them. And that is one of the reasons why they're out there in such massive numbers. I was reading that the numbers are 600,000 Israelis who came out over the past weekend after the defense minister was sacked. And that's, you know, equivalent to, I think in the United States, it would be like 6.5 million people coming out into the streets, which is an unheard of phenomenon.
Of course, Netanyahu would be ruled unfit if convicted on any of the corruption counts he faces and denies. So the new laws would suit him just fine.
Well, part of the laws that are being contemplated aren't just about the court and about naming justices, but actually about, as you mentioned, whether or how a prime minister is to be determined fit or unfit. And now the attorney general can disqualify a prime minister based on a criminal conviction. And what he is going to do is eliminate that as a condition for the Attorney General to be able to rule out a prime minister. So if he is convicted, he's now facing four corruption charges. If he's convicted on any of them currently, he would lose the prime ministership. The reason why that's important, aside from his own political career, is that he will go to prison. And Netanyahu is very wily about certain things, and one of them is staying in power, and the other is protecting his behind.
It pales Trump's successful efforts to stack his Supreme Court, doesn't it? It goes even further than Trump would dare.
Well, Trump had a sort of Hail Mary. I don't know if that term is used in Australia, but he just sort of threw the ball as far down the field as he could and hoped that somebody would catch it. In Israel, this is a much more deliberate, much more well-organized, well-oiled machine that is trying to basically overthrow democracy. And they've conceived of this plan in very intricate detail, and they have scores of legislation that they're going to pass.
But Richard, were they prepared for such a vast wave of opposition? Did they predict that?
No, I don't think that they did at all. And in some ways, I think that they were clueless. They were sitting in back rooms and devising these laws and plans, and they didn't bother to test the atmosphere in the country itself. Israelis, though, tend to be a very quiescent lot. They don't tend to go out to demonstrations like this. They tend to be very satisfied with their lives, and they tend to trust their military and their intelligence services to protect them. So they are likely the coup plotters, is what I call them, didn't believe that this sort of thing would confront them. And it really is an unprecedented development in the history of Israel. It's both unprecedented in terms of how radical the proposals of the government were, and also unprecedented in terms of the fierce response by the public.
So very significant people are jumping Bibi's ship, including, well, his lawyer.
Yes, he's got a lawyer who is defending him in the four corruption the trials on the four corruption charges. And the lawyer said to him, if you want to jump off this branch, I'm not going with you. And he said he wouldn't represent him anymore. And as I said, Bibi's sense of survival is very astute and acute. And once he realized he was going to lose his lawyer, I think he really had very little choice. In addition, he had Joe Biden on the phone, telling him that he had to institute this pause.
We're listening to the wise words of Richard Silverstein, Jewish freelance writer of the blog Tikkun Olam. Now, I understand a growing number of soldiers have declared they won't take orders from a civilian government they believe is undermining Israel's democracy. So, a huge potential impact on national security.
Hundreds of officers, and especially in the Air Force, which is probably the most important unit in the Israeli military, announced that they would no longer do reserve duty. And even some active duty officers have announced that they won't serve if this legislative agenda goes through. And the role of the military in Israeli life is different than in almost any other country that I know of. The army is the glue that holds the country together. Almost everyone either does serve in the military or is eligible, but for other reasons might be given an exemption from serving. And it is the national cohesive unit. And when the army rebels and basically rises up in mutiny, this has never happened in the history of the country.
And now, if Netanyahu doubles down and succeeds in forcing this through, I just can't use the word reform. They're not reforms, they're atrocities. Israel's government seems likely to take more steps towards annexing the West Bank.
Well, that's the beginning of it. We have two ministers who, in addition to having been convicted of terrorist offenses, are figures who basically want to drive Palestinians out of Israel entirely, not just out of the West Bank, and not just sort of, you know, annexing the West Bank, but they want to eliminate Palestinian presence from Israel itself and from the West Bank. So that's how extreme the agenda of the government is.
You're talking about Finance Minister Smotrich?
I'm talking about Itamar Ben-Gvir and Bezalel Smotrich. Smotrich is basically the quote-unquote governor of the West Bank. He's also the finance minister, which basically allows him to funnel billions to the settlements. And Ben-Gvir is the police minister. And in order for Netanyahu to get Ben-Gvir to agree to this pause in the legislative agenda, Netanyahu gave him a new private militia, a new police force that Ben-Gvir could use for God only knows what purpose. But he has engaged in acts of terrorism and been an accessory to terrorism in the past. So God only knows what use he might make of his own private militia.
This does not augur well for Israel's relations with Arab neighbors.
Well, we have the Arab Abraham Accords that have been negotiated over the past few years. And many pro-Israel people and the Israeli government believe that it's drove a wedge between the Palestinians and the Arab world. And to an extent, it did. However, when the Arab countries see what is happening to both the Palestinians and inside Israel itself, I think they're going to get a wake-up call, and they're going to realize that they don't want to be in bed with a country, with a government like this.
How are these protests over the judicial oversight issue, as well as the issues in the West Bank, how are these being seen by adversaries like Iran?
Well, that's very interesting. You would expect that Israel's enemies like Hezbollah and Lebanon and Iran would be, their hands would be in glee, relishing what's going on. But we haven't heard any bellicose statements from either one. And we haven't had any attacks in particular by Iran or Hezbollah against Israel. I think what's happening is, like when two political adversaries, one of them gets into trouble or into a scandal, the other one just shuts up and watches as the adversary sort of self-destructs. And I think a little bit of that is going on here. Iran is trying to determine like what exactly is going to happen to Israel.
Is Bibi's handling of this a gift to Benny Gantz? Will it revive his career?
Well, there's a lot of questions about what is going to happen here. It's a question whether Netanyahu's government will fall. The latest polls show that the opposition, which would be Benny Gantz, Yair Lapid, would be able to just barely form a government under the latest poll. And they also show that Netanyahu's coalition would lose 5 or 6 out of 120 seats, which is eliminating their majority. So, yes, it does augur well for the opposition, but it ain't over till it's over, you know, that's saying. And Netanyahu has many more than 9 lives, so I don't count him out by any stretch.
We never can. Now, he plans to reintroduce the laws next month. Surely this will lead to a standoff between the judiciary and the legislature.
Yes, because the Supreme Court has the right to review the legislation. The justices can disqualify all of it, or they can approve some of it and disqualify the rest of it. This is a right-wing Supreme Court, so they may want to compromise and approve some of the provisions and disqualify others. But whatever the court decides is what the result is going to be. So if Netanyahu and his allies don't get the agenda, don't get the plan that they want, they really have no recourse. They cannot overrule the Supreme Court. So the only thing that they can do is they can buy their time and try to appoint the justices that will be quiescent and do their bidding. And that would be a sort of a slow coup as opposed to the fast coup they're trying now.
Richard, what do you think is the most likely outcome?
I don't have that crystal ball for this kind of thing. I think it's better than 50-50 chance the government will fall. And if it does, I believe that the opposition will come to power. But the opposition was in power for a year and had an extremely weak government. So it's, all bets are off, really, in terms of what could happen here. I've been following this for decades. And I have to say, even this is throwing me for a loop in terms of just seeing what will happen.
Richard Silverstein, Jewish freelancer and writer of the blog Tikkun Olam. We should point out that Tikkun means to save the world, and you're doing your best, Richard. Thanks.
Thank you, Philip. Good to be with you.
And we'll be back next week with more on Israel. We're going to tell you about the American billionaires funding the think tank behind the push to change Israel's judicial system.
Think bigger about the world we live in. Ask your smart speaker to play ABC RN.